Well, Jesse, a win for us to talk about today, a winning edition of the post-game show, Jace Talk.
This is rare.
It is rare.
Let's go.
Not something we've said that often in the recent history of the Toronto Blue Jays, i.e. the last couple of weeks.
That's closer than we thought it was going to be.
Yeah, 5-4 win for the Blue Jays over the Mariners. They led 5-0 at one point. And while this win does not, almost certainly does not change the calculus, like the long-term outlook for what you'll see when it comes to selling, rebuilding over the course of the next month, right up until the deadline at the end of July, but it is certainly exciting. You hold on to your butts a little bit for the last couple of innings. Mitch Haniger hitting a 3-run bomb. Luke Raley going yard off of Chad Green for his first run since like the beginning of June or whatever it was. Like this game had a little bit of everything. But if there's one thing I've learned, it's that A, Weyrod is fun to watch when he's on, and B, the Jays, Jesse, never do things the easy way. I'm not even sure they know how to do things the easy way, but at least they did hold on for a win today.
Yeah, it's refreshing to come on here and be able to talk about a victory. I think we know about the struggles of the bullpen, and it's not really the usual suspects today. It was Trevor Richards who got roughed up a little bit, and Brendan Little came in, did a good job, and then Chad Green throwing a season-high matching 27 pitches on the day. I think he got better really as his outing went along. So while there were some stumbles for the bullpen today, it was nice to be able to see them actually lock it down. I think you're getting a taste of two teams here that the offense is not great on either side and runs are at a premium. And that's why when you think about Dalton Varsho and the play that he made on that double play, 40% chance of making that grab, probability of making that grab. He does it, throws to second for the double play. That is now back-to-back days where Dalton Varsho has had a game-changing play. And I don't think they win the game without that play from Dalton Varsho in the bottom of the fourth. And in fact, the probability of winning the game for the Seattle Mariners on that play alone dropped 12%.
That's crazy.
So that's how much of a swing play that was for Dalton Varsho. And we were talking about who's going to be in this core moving forward for the Toronto Blue Jays. And despite the struggles from Dalton Varsho offensively, you understand exactly why the Blue Jays made the trade for him. And you understand why there's still a lot of excitement about him because of what he can do with his glove.
That is Jesse Rubinov. I'm Sho Ali. Like I said, you're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. Give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well, 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It is always open. We're here until the top of the next hour. Let's start. Actually, let's keep talking about Dalton Varsho, because I said this yesterday when he had that 5% catch probability catch, which was him like in the top of the first inning banging into the, or bottom of the first inning banging into
reckless abandon.
Yeah, it was wild, right? Him into the wall and left center. It was great. Like I said, 5% catch probability play. And I've said this before, and you and I have talked about this before, but the idea that like you can get by with Varsho hitting the way he is hitting because of what he gives you with the glove. It's just that you can't really get by with everyone else
exactly
in the
right
offense playing as poorly with the bat as they have been. I would say specifically in the outfield, right? So now over the last 10 games, not including today, George Springer entering play today was batting like .450 or whatever it was in his last 10 games. So that's definitely a good thing. But when it comes to, I mean, Kevin Kiermaier, who had some pretty ugly swing and misses today after the home run yesterday, like you can tolerate it and hide it to a certain extent from one batter, but you can't really do it with a whole host of batters. And again, I think that's probably another indictment of roster construction, but it would be a real shame. I got to say it would be a massive shame because of the really weird rules of how gold gloves are applied, because I think Varsho splits time in left and in center.
Yeah.
And because of that, it would be a real shame if he got like screwed out of a gold glove this year, because I got to say there might be no, and this is not a diss to Springer or Kiermaier, who are both very good defensively, but there might be no better outfielder in all of baseball than Dalton Varsho. And I mean, if he could win as the utility gold glover, perhaps,
yeah,
right, that would be great. But because of the way he splits time, unless he unless he plays at one position for the rest of the year, it would be really annoying, honestly, for the year to end and Varsho not get some recognition, because he really deserves it. Like, I know the bat is not what you want. He's batting below 200. It's not great, obviously, but and you can't ignore that. But from a Gold Glove defense only perspective, he deserves to win that award.
Yeah, I mean, we all talk about how he's, it's like hard to even have the conversation about anybody else being at his level in terms of outfielders in Major League Baseball. Yeah, the eligibility rules are a little bit messed up when it comes to Gold Gloves and even Platinum Gloves. Like, if we're talking about this guy being, bar none, the best outfielder in baseball, that should put him in the discussion for a Platinum Glove, which is the best outfielder at any position. You're bang on. Look, you could have Dalton Varsho batting 7th, 8th, 6th, and if he's batting 200 with a little bit of pop, that's fine if everybody else is carrying the load. But the fact that the Blue Jays are where they are with their offense right now, it exposes him offensively when it really shouldn't. And this guy is just such a pleasure to watch him. And not only is he so good that he makes these incredible plays, but even the little plays, like the heads up, everything is intelligent. Even the way he fields balls when he's battling the sun, trying to take the long way around, little circle and block out the sun and make it easier on him. Everything is just smooth, it's calculated, it's smart. He thinks his way through the game of baseball. He's a good base runner. He does all the little things really well. You'd like to see the average obviously creep up a little bit more, but you take the good with the bad, and the good defensively is really, really, really good when it comes to Dalton Varsho. It's fun to watch.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll go to the phones. We'll go to the text line very shortly. 590-590, name and location. We did some good. We'll talk about Weyrod in a second here, because he was a lot of fun to watch again. Two great starts for Yariel Rodriguez in a row now, going back to Canada Day, in which he was also phenomenal. But I also wanted to talk about a particular decision-making process in this game that I think is something we should be past at this point in the season, Jesse, because a win is great. It's their 40th win of the year. That's obviously I think objectively, it's just more fun to watch wins than losses. Like I said, off the top, I'm not sure this changes the long-term calculus for what will happen at the deadline this season, but you can still enjoy a win. And you know what? You know who I'm happiest the most for? The people who shelled out big bucks to go watch this game in Seattle.
Great point.
Honestly, I really am. Like the Chad Green gets up there with two outs in the bottom of the 9th inning. Dominic Canzone is battling. He's down to his final strike, and the people get up at T-Mobile Park like it's the Rogers Center, basically. Like, I know this is not new news by any means. I'm not breaking anything here, but I was happy for the quote-unquote home crowd, for all the Canadians and Jays fans who packed up T-Mobile Park, because they haven't gotten a lot to cheer for. And after seeing, after probably shelling out big bucks much earlier in this season and planning it out when this schedule dropped before one pitch was ever thrown this entire season, and then seeing what happened all season long, all the way to this early July weekend, and knowing what they had a possibility of watching instead of what they hoped to get, what they got today, I know it was a bit of a butt clenching win, but it was I'm happy for them, I really am. But one moment I think we should be past is maybe second guessing some of the team's best hitters. And there was a moment top of the 6th inning where Spencer Horwitz got lifted for Davis Schneider.
Yeah.
And Taylor Sesedo, of all people, was on the mound, old pal Taylor Sesedo. And so they certainly are doing that because Horwitz bats left, Sesedo is a lefty.
Right,
Schneider bats right. It's a lefty-lefty matchup. Sesedo has not particularly acquitted himself very well against righties. I get it, in theory. So they yank Horwitz for Schneider. David Schneider gets ahead 3-1 in the count before some really ugly swings to strike out to end the inning. And it was a tough watch, given that certainly this is hindsight, certainly a little bit, Schneider swinging on pitches that were low and below the zone when he was up 3-1 in the count. But before that, Sesedo walked Springer on 4 pitches, right? So why are you swinging after you took some really tough pitches to get to 3-1 in the first place? But just generally speaking, going forward, it meant that they were without Spencer Horwitz, who has been one of the team's best hitters. And I get it, lefty on lefty. I totally understand. But I was talking about this during the game, but we had just seen Spencer Horwitz get unexpectedly, with a late scratch, get put into the lineup against, of all people, Framber Valdez a couple days ago. And that's a lefty on lefty matchup. And he's at some point, you just got to trust your best hitters. At some point, you're beyond playing the splits for every single situation, and you're better off just letting Horwitz hit. I think he has earned it And given to the given that the Jays have sacrificed defense and run prevention to bring up a lot of these guys, do you think they just like let them play at this point?
Yeah, it's so interesting that it feels like this isn't the first time that we've talked about this kind of decision making with the Blue Jays, like overthinking things. Like I keep going back to when Ernie Clement was lights out. There was a time where he was, for about a 2-week stretch, the second hottest hitter in the American League. And then he found himself on the bench more often than not. And ever since he started getting regular playing time again, he's seen his batting average dwindle all the way down to 250, and he hasn't been that same player. And it just makes you wonder, like, when guys are going, stop interrupting their hot streaks.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, sure, analytics this, analytics that. You're 10 games below 500. Spencer Horwitz is one of the few guys that are swinging a hot bat in your lineup. Just let the guy hit.
Yeah, just let him play.
And your point about Framber Valdez, I mean, that's, he has clearly acquitted himself okay to lefty pitching in the major leagues so far. And it's just like there's an element here of overthinking things a lot. And sometimes you just have to let it go and let the game play out. And it's funny because they're not operating with sort of thinking, what are the fans going to criticize us about? They don't care, clearly. But it feels like when you make moves like this, and they don't work out.
Yeah.
That's when fans just jump all over you. And like to bring in David Schneider, a guy who's been ice cold for months now, it's just in theory, analytically, sure. Yeah. Might make sense. But to your point, Spencer Horwitz is one of the better hitters they've had over the last number of weeks. And if he gets continually lifted in these spots, you're not even going to find out what he's made of. Like, this is a guy that may or may not be one of the guys that you're relying on heading into 2025. So you better figure it
out.
That's
what it is.
So put him in clutch spots. Yeah. Figure out if he can do it. Stop lifting him. Stop lifting guys that are hot.
That's what it is. I'm not. I don't want to like make the whole show about this because they won today. But no, it just we're at a point in the season where I think we are going to be talking more about the guys who should be here next year and about the guys who are not going to be here next year. And almost certainly Spencer Horwitz, unless he has some catastrophic fall off between now and the end of the season, he should be. You know what I mean? Like he should be a part of this, if not the core, he should be on the team next year. And if that's the case, just let him hit.
Give him a chance every day.
That's really my only complaint. Like really, really my only complaint. Cause I'm not even going to complain too much about Trevor Richards. Like Trevor Richards and Chad Green, I've said this many times, are pretty much the only members of the circle of trust right now. And Trevor Richards was great in the first inning and not so great in his second inning of relief today. So I'm not going to crush him too much. It's just that the bullpen has been a real adventure. Even Chad Green gave him a run today, right? Yeah. So it's just, I'm not going to blame them too much. It's just those things do happen, but I don't know. It's just, that's pretty much the only real negative part. I wanted to get it out of the way, but I didn't like that. I just want to see Horwitz play a little bit more. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Go to the text line, 590-590 very shortly. Let's go to the phones, and joining us here to start us off is Ian in Toronto. Ian, what's up?
Not much. How's it going, guys?
Good. Always fun when we can chat about a win these days, Ian.
which obviously doesn't happen as often as we wanted this year. But, I mean, this is part of the reason why John Schneider needs to go, what you guys were saying about pulling guys and back and forth. You guys both know this. Baseball players are creatures of habit. And the only guy who is in a consistent habit on this team is Vlad, who – up until a couple of weeks ago, I'm saying this, was a failure. Like, he had no slugging. He got on base, but a first baseman who doesn't hit home runs has pretty much no value in the league. Talk about Luis Arraez, who's been traded twice in 2 years. So that's just how I see it. Pinch hitters are striking out at a 30% clip this year. And again, like you said, Horwitz, give him a chance. The guy might not slug against left-handed pitching, but I've looked up his numbers. He still gets on base at almost a 40% clip against left-handed pitching in the minors. So, again, figure out if this guy can hack it for next year because, let's be honest, this team is playing for 2025. 2024 season is dead, done, finished, okay? There are no playoffs coming, and that's just where it is. But at the same time, there needs to be a cleaning of house to a degree. You need to retool this team. But one thing that I also wanted to mention was, as much as I don't want to see him go, but you need to trade Chris Bassitt. And the reason being is you're going to get a decent haul for him. And then that $22 million can be repurposed into another pitcher because it looks like Ariel Rodriguez can be a decent enough pitcher. You still got Gausman. You still have Berrios. Manoah's going to come back next year. Hopefully, you know, to at least halfway to where he was this year, showing that he could actually throw the ball over the plate and, you know, not walk everybody. So you already have four starters. You can't necessarily bank on Tiedemann because his inning total has been going backwards, not forwards year over year. So it's just with Bassett, and I love the guy. Like, the guy's pitched lights out over the last couple of months up until the last start. But if you can get a decent haul back for someone like that and you're looking at retooling for 2025, then you have to, all options have to be on the table. You can't just sit and say, okay, well, we'll just bring him back and everything.
Ian, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us on Jays Talk. Okay, some I agree with, some I disagree with. I will disagree, Jesse, that up until 2 weeks ago, Vladdy was a failure. I know people wanted more slugging and more power out of him, but he's been. There was that stretch after the first week of the season where he was not good because he also just wasn't hitting at all. He wasn't hitting a lot of for power or getting on base. So that stretch of the season, I was frustrated with Vladdy. But even if he turned into like a slap happy singles hitter, he was getting on base a lot. He was taking more walks. So I will disagree with that. I think Vladdy's been great by and large all season long. You still want more power from him, and we're starting to see that more, which is good. But I disagree with that assessment of Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s season. I also am not sure you can count on Alek Manoah coming back for next season. Like, if Alek Manoah pitches at all next season, I think that's a bonus, honestly. Like, he got the internal brace surgery on his arm. And I mean, I think it was a similar surgery to the one Hyunjin Ryu had. And Ryu also last year, just for comparison's sake, did not return until like effectively the trade deadline. Like, he returned like for the last like 8 weeks of the season, essentially. So I guess I'm not sure you can forecast roster moves for the starting rotation specifically. I do agree that Bassett would fetch you probably a decent amount, and I've made my case for you that I think he should be an all-star, but because he's pitched very, very, very well.
Until he allowed three in the first inning.
He did allow three earned runs the last time out. Yeah, like literally like minutes after we had that conversation on Thursday, which is really tough.
So good.
But I say, I still think he would fetch you great value, I think, because he has a year left on his deal after this year. But, I mean, if you're trading Bassett and you don't have Manoah, are you like, I'm not sure if you're also trading Kikuchi, because you also just need people to pitch for you at some point. But I do think there is a question about Yariel Rodriguez and what he can be. And he's under contract for a number of years, and it's encouraging to see what we saw from him. We'll talk about him very shortly, but I'm not sure you can necessarily forecast Manoah being back as to why you can trade Bassett or anyone else.
Well, I don't even think it's a question of just health with Manoah. I know he was pretty good in his return and stretches, but this is a guy who was all the way down to single A and was getting roughed up in single A. So to come off an injury of this magnitude and then just expect him to come right back and be the Alek Manoah of old, I think is potentially asking a lot. I wouldn't bank on that happening. I would prepare as if that's probably not going to happen and try and have as much pitching depth as possible. The issue is, you're right, they don't have much pitching depth at all beyond the guys that they have at the major league level right now. Like, they weren't even, until Yariel Rodriguez came back, they weren't even sure who was going to pitch every fifth day, and right, that's why they had to go to a bullpen day. Like, they just don't have much pitching depth. And it's funny because over the years, you know, the last couple years, obviously the Blue Jays pitching has been fantastic, but if you go to the few years before that, the offense was great, the pitching was the issue. So I'm just weary of trading away pitchers because I realize how important starting pitching is to winning baseball. It feels like the Blue Jays, when the offense is good, the pitching isn't, and this is sort of a microcosm, this season is representative of that, but going back years, it's they can never fully put it together. It's either the starting pitching has struggles and the offense went to Oscar and Lourdes and Marcus Semien were here, the offense is great. And then ever since then, the offense has been shoddy and the starting pitching has been the strength of this team. That being said, we started the show, the pregame show today, talking about the need to build up the farm system again. That has been, it is just barren at this point. And Chris Bassett being 35 years of age and Yusei Kikuchi also being over 30, these are guys that absolutely can fetch you a lot and can help replenish that farm system. So while it does detract from the major league level pitching, at some point you got to trade guys in order to get a farm system too. So the case makes a lot of sense, and people are going to want Chris Bassett and Yusei Kikuchi. So that's why I think it's a reasonable thing to want these guys dealt.
I think of the Cole Reagans trade the Rangers and Royals made June of last year. So the Rangers traded Reagans and a minor leaguer to the Royals in exchange for Aroldis Chapman. right? Yeah. And again, like that was a trade, like the signing.
I'd take a Cole Reagans.
Yeah, for, I would too, right? But I think that's, while it's hard to forecast what people are, like if you're trading Bassett, Kikuchi certainly as well, but Bassett has one more year in his deal and Kikuchi just not, he's a UFA, so it's a little different, right? But if you are trading Bassett, you need an asset like that coming back. And you don't know for sure what you're getting. You don't 100% know. And I mean, Reagan's pitch at the Rogers Center last year where he completely imploded, where he was like falling off the mound, he's like, throwing balls wayward. I was there for that game sitting in the radio booth, and everyone else in the stadium probably was like, what the hell is going on right now, right? Like, what is happening? But I mean, look at Reagan's now. He was like a trendy pick for the AL Cy Young when the season started. I don't know if he's going to win, but he's still a very, very, very good pitcher. So that's the kind of trade the Blue Jays need to execute if you are trading a Bassett.
Definitely. And the fact that Chris Bassett is 35, I think you want to get out in front of the decline. And I'm not saying that in his age 36 season, he's absolutely going to fall off a cliff, but it wouldn't be impossible that he would not be the same pitcher next year, sure, or he'd slowly diminish. And therefore, the value that you would be getting in return wouldn't be what it once was. And then even if his contract expires and you end up not trading him, he's 36 years old. Are you really going to want to re-sign a 36-year-old just to eat up innings for you? So all things being equal, I think the best course of action for the Blue Jays is to offload the guys that are up there in age and at least have a little bit of control that you might be able to get something pretty significant back.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's get to Brad in Barrie. Brad, what's up?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Good. Exciting win for the Jays. I got a little different spin on it. I mean, I really don't feel that, hey, just listening to you guys, that really any of those pitchers are on the table. I mean, the Jays have pitched well overall. I know it hasn't been great, but let's call it what it is. I mean, they just have not put the runs together, and that we know this. And, you know, you just looked yesterday as an example, but there's been a ton of games where, you know, they've lost those close games because they can't put the runs together. And a lot of that I see inconsistency coming from the manager, which obviously we know is also coming from the top brass talking to him and kind of micromanaging him. And you can see this in the decisions all the way back to the playoff last year to Seattle. I really feel that, you know, you guys are talking about Horowitz there. I mean, now you're 10 games back or whatever it is. You play these young guys, let them do their thing. Clement, Horowitz, Snyder, get them in there and let them do their thing. And really the Jays to me are a good baseball team. And they're just on a rudderless ship. They're being managed poorly and not given the opportunities that really they should be getting. And you can look at every game and see it. And you know, like, it's one of those things where I'd love to see John Gibbons back managing this club, because honestly, for all his downfalls, the guy knew how to make the right decisions and win ball games.
Hey, Brad, thanks for the call, man. I will disagree that John Gibbons would be the cure for what ails this team. Because here's the thing. Like, a lot of people like Brad say, oh, this is all on John Schneider, he's pushing the wrong buttons. But I mean, I don't know. Like, I have not seen anything to suggest, Jesse, that if they were to make Gibby the manager again, or they were to make DeMarlo Hale the manager, as well-liked as he is, or if they were to make Don Mattingly the manager, I have not seen anything to suggest that the team would suddenly turn it around. Like, that's not, like, don't get me wrong, like, a manager plays a role in how the clubhouse functions. But at the same time, I don't believe that it would be all that different. It just feels like it'd be like six of one, half a dozen of the other, if you're changing management with the way the team is run from the front office down, which is why a lot of people clamor for changes with like Shapiro and Atkins. And I agree with that, right? Like, that's where the change needs to happen first. I almost feel like, and I've said this before, but I almost feel like I'd rather see the front office get changed and then this new front office give John Schneider a little bit more of a free reign, because I almost feel like you'd get a different result to a certain extent. But I'm just not sure if changing the managers would do anything beyond, you know, like shuffling the deck chairs on the Titanic if the players aren't the ones being changed, or if the batting coaches aren't the ones being changed, or even if the management from a front office perspective aren't the ones being changed.
No, I mean, just look at the stats. The Blue Jays are fifth worst in the major leagues in terms of runs scored. In terms of starting pitching, they are 14th with ERA, And I don't even want to check the relievers because it's not good. I'm pulling it up right now. They are 29th in all of baseball in bullpen ERA, and their bullpen has allowed the most home runs in all of baseball. The reality is, for whatever faults you think John Schneider has, and you could make a very good case that there have been many instances where he's made the wrong move. We were talking about, in our opinion, one that sort of rubbed us the wrong way today. But at the end of the day, these are players, and they're either good or they're not. The responsibility lies with them to show that they can perform. And too many times this season, irrespective of what John Schneider has done, the players have failed to perform. Then it goes up, starts to go up the food chain a little bit, and
right.
You have the conversation about Ross Atkins and whether he's constructed a team of players that are just not good enough. But you can't hold John Schneider responsible for guys hitting 200. And when you have five guys that are hitting 200 in a lineup, you're going to have a hard time scoring. Yeah. That's a reality. John Schneider, well, he can't go up there and step in the batter's box every time out. There's only so much a manager could do. You could have prime Joe Torre pushing the buttons for this team, and what they could be four games better than they are right now. Like, the right. reality is, at some point, it's a talent issue. And for me, that's what I give more to it, other than just putting everything at the feet of John Schneider. And I don't think that's necessarily fair.
Let's go back to the phones before we take a quick break, and we'll get some more phone calls on the other side. Before we do that, let's get to Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie, what's up?
Not much, gentlemen. Good to talk to you again, as always.
Yeah, what's up, Eddie? What's on your mind today?
Well, I got a couple of things. First of all, what a great pitching performance by Rodriguez. I mean, whatever he did in that Astros series, he really, like in his last start against the Astros, he really carried it over against the Mariners. And it was like, it was only a matter of time before he was going to get that first major league win, because he probably deserved a better fate in that game against the Astros, because he pitched so well against that tough offense. And then he pitched even better today against the Mariners. So big kudos to him, and good job on Kirk behind the plate and with the bat too. So that was really good as well. Now, I wanted to ask you guys something about Dalton Varsho, because I was thinking about those catches he made yesterday and today. And I know that the All-Star reserves are going to be named, I think, tomorrow, right? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Okay. Now, do they go by like offensive numbers or by defensive runs saved, like all those great, you know, defensive catches that Varsho has made between like this year and that sort of thing? Do you think he has a chance to make the All-Star team?
Unfortunately, I would say no, Eddie. I would say no, because he's batting 200. And unfortunately, the All-Star game, don't get me wrong, he's supremely talented defensively, but the All-Star game is about flashy offensive plays. Not that it matters, right? But yeah, unfortunately for him, I think he's going to get hosed there a little.
Yeah, because those catches were definitely All-Star worthy material right there, because especially that one that he made on that ground, like, that was incredible. And then have the presence of mind to throw out the runner at second base. I mean, that was amazing. That was really good. Anyway, thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks, Eddie. Thanks for the call, as usual. Yeah,
I agree. It was amazing.
It was phenomenal. And Varsho, I think, from a defensive standpoint, like I've said this before, but if there could be some kind of additional event where, kind of like the skills competition of the NBA All-Star Weekend, where, like, you know, they do the pass, dribble, shoot thing. Scottie Barnes participated in that event last year. But if they could,
that's brilliant.
If there could be something like that,
they should do that.
Dalton Varsho and the guys like him would absolutely dominate those events. Like, how much ground can you cover from left to center, or like, can you
put Show in charge of the MLB All-Star Weekend?
But that's also
what are we doing.
But the other problem with that, of course, is that, like, who's going to go
and run as hard as you can?
Yeah, who's going to go super hard at the All-Star game for anything?
Come on, man.
Right? No one's going to do that.
It's just that needs to happen. Like, this is the problem. Everyone's turning into a prima donna in professional sports, and no one wants to try hard in All-Star games. Well, then nobody's going to watch. So I'm all in favor of that. But yeah, if Dalton Varsho was batting 250 with, you know, a couple more home runs and 45 RBI instead of 36, shoulda, woulda, coulda, but that is more like an All-Star season. I really believe he'd have a chance because of how many runs saved he has.
Yeah,
but the reality is, he's batting 200. Like, barely batting barely, 200. Yeah, yeah. And that's not going to qualify you for any All-Star game anytime soon.
Like Stephen Kwan barely got voted into the All-Star game this year. And the guy was batting almost like 400 for a chunk of this season, right? Like he almost just squeaked by the skin of his teeth into the All-Star game. And that was because Judge and Soto and Kyle Tucker, despite the fact that he's injured, were the guys getting the votes, right?
Varsho was in the Futures game.
Like that's true.
5 years ago.
That's true.
So get him to the real one eventually.
The bat stuff needs to pick up with him. The offense needs to pick up with Varsho. Yeah. Eddie also mentioned Yariel Rodriguez. Let's talk about him before we hit a break here. And then get back to the phones, get back to the text
Sick,
line.
Sick, wicked, and nasty today.
Yeah, he was
great. How I would describe it.
He was great. So the last time out, 6 2/3. This is on Canada Day. 6 2/3, one earned run, issued 2 walks, struck out 6 on 83 pitches. It was the best start of his major league career. Today, he did not allow a hit until the 5th inning. He got some timely help from the defense, including one Dalton Varsho, turning a phenomenal double play, which we talked about. But 6 innings, 1 hit, no runs, 2 walks, 6 strikeouts, 82 pitches, 45 strikes. He absolutely loaded up on that four-seam fastball.
There you go.
Like you talked about in the pregame show. He threw 82 pitches, Jesse. Of those 82 pitches, he threw the four-seamer 48 times. So we essentially saw him throw the four-seamer 59% of the time. Mm-hmm. He let a four-seamer out of his hand. It averaged 93.8 miles an hour, which is okay. It maxed out at 96.2 miles an hour. And against a team like the Mariners that strikes out a lot, it was a great dose of the fastball yesterday from Gausman. It was a good dose of the fastball today from Yariel Rodriguez. We saw Trevor Richards try to dial up some fastballs, and then he got a little bit in his second inning of relief work. But on the flip side, Chad Green managed to use his fastball to great effect. So it was nice to see them dial up a game plan that obviously works against the Mariners. And hey, I mean, if Y-Rod can keep this up, that's a great spot to be in for your fifth starter role. I don't know if you can rely on that every single time out, but if he can be around a couple of runs given up every 5 days, then you'll take that from your five starter.
Yeah, I think giving him $32 million over 5 years, I think they're hoping for even probably better than a fifth starter. But at this point of his career, just the inexperience that he has, I think you just want to see progress. In the last two starts have shown a lot of progress. He threw the fastball 19% more than he usually does today. And the reason being, as we discussed in the pregame show, the Seattle Mariners are the worst team in baseball against the four seamer. And I think another thing that he did a really good job of today was his pitch count has gotten really high, really quick in a lot of his other starts. In his last 6 starts, he's in the bottom 5 in the league in pitches per inning. And today he got into some trouble with back-to-back walks, but he navigated his way out of it. And therefore he was able to go as deep as he did in this baseball game because he was a little bit more efficient with the pitches. That's what I'm going to continue to look for from him, is just a little bit more pitch efficiency as we continue on here. And just the walks have been the problem. Limit the walks, keep the pitch efficiency where it was or around where it was today. And you're giving yourself a very good opportunity to have a stellar outing time in, time out. I mean, it's a great development for the Toronto Blue Jays, because when you make an investment of $32 million in a guy that's never pitched in the major leagues before, you are taking a pretty big risk. And there were moments, definitely, where I think Blue Jays fans watched him and they watched the walk issues and they watched the pitch efficiency issues. And they said to themselves, oh, it seems like a lot of money for a guy who can't find the strike zone a lot of the time. But back-to-back starts here, there's a little bit more confidence in what Yariel Rodriguez is capable of. And that's nice to see.
416-870-0591, 888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call. We'll take a couple more calls after the break. 590-590, name and location. We'll go to the text line, read some text on the other side as well. You're listening to Jays Talk. Jays win 5-4 to even this series in Seattle at 1 game apiece. Show Ali and Jesse Rubinoff with you. Jays Talk is back after this on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Strikes, really, you know, really good fastball, good split, ran some deep counts. I think that was the only real thing, you know. When he's in the zone, he's really good. You know, he had a really good mix with Kirky going and building some confidence. But everything starts with his fastball, and located it really well today.
That is John Schneider discussing the 6 innings of 1 hit, no run ball, 6 strikeouts over 82 pitches from Yariel Rodriguez, who was phenomenal for the second straight start. You'll absolutely take that from your fifth starter. You hope you see that a little bit often as you go on, and we'll likely see Y-Rod one more time before the probably one more time. Yeah, we'll see how it shakes out. No game on Monday. three in San Fran, three in Arizona. But yeah, we'll likely see Y-Rod one more time before the All-Star break. That's Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk. Jays win 5-4 over the Mariners to knot this series up at one game apiece. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network, on Sportsnet.ca, and on the Sportsnet app. Let's go back to the phones. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Rick in Edmonton joining us here on Jays Talk. Rick, what's up?
Hey, good evening, gentlemen.
How's it going, Rick?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing all right.
All right. Good. I just wanted to make a comment, though, you know, about Bichette and Guerrero. If they have to keep one of them, I would prioritize Bichette because, well, let's just say Guerrero. He's solid, but he is not the generational player his father was. I had the privilege of watching Vladdy Sr. in Montreal back in the day. So, yeah, what do you think? Should they...
Well,
are they both going to stay? Or
here's the thing, Rick. Like, I don't disagree with you that he's not the generational hitter, but that doesn't also mean he's a bad player.
Well, he's solid. I can agree there.
Yeah, I think.
But if they have to trade because he doesn't want to sign long term, I think you have to prioritize Bichette over Guerrero because, in my opinion, Bichette is the better player.
I think the thing that when I look at Vladdy and the fact that he may not be the generational player that we thought he was, I don't think Bo Bichette has shown you that he's that guy either.
Right.
And they're both going to command a ton of money. Bo Bichette may be, in the end, more expensive because he plays a premium position at shortstop. The average salary among the top five shortstops is certainly higher than the top five first basemen. And if you look at the statistics this year, if you're going just based on recency bias, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is having a far superior year to Bo Bichette. And I would like to see Bo Bichette climb himself out of it before, if you're the Blue Jays front office, before you're willing to make an investment of that magnitude in a guy like Bo Bichette. And then the other thing is that Vladdy has been very vocal about wanting to stay a member of the Toronto Blue Jays and perhaps for the duration of his career. I haven't heard any of that from Bo Bichette.
Right.
And I think that factors into it a little bit, probably how easy the negotiations, or difficult for that matter, they might be. But as it stands right now, there's a lot of boxes that Vladdy checks off that, frankly, right now, Bo doesn't check them off for me.
I think he can get back to that point, but he'd have to have like a really precipitous turnaround.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like,
yes,
he would really have to turn things around for that conversation to change, unfortunately. I would like for it to. Don't get me wrong. I'm not like advocating for Bo to be bad and play his way out of Toronto. By no means. I would for sure, and I think a lot of fans would also like for
prefer
him to
have
be
them
good.
Both.
Yeah,
yeah,
for them to both play well enough that it's worth keeping them both. But if you're making the decision right now, the person who has played his way into staying is Vladdy, right? And I agree. He is not a Hall of Famer like his father is. That's a pretty high bar. I would say it's a higher bar in baseball than it is in like any other sport, because it's like the, and I say this with love, but the Baseball Writers Association, a little bit snobby, right? Like,
yeah,
they have a high bar for guys getting into the Hall of Fame. And I'm actually fine with that. I'm fine with being like a small hall type of guy. I think maybe like the Basketball Hall of Fame lets maybe too many guys in. Maybe the NFL Hall, like the Pro Football Hall of Fame does as well, perhaps, but the NHL is kind of like right in the middle sometimes, but yeah, I think if that's the bar, you're probably like never going to clear that bar of being a Hall of Famer.
It's also our fault and the fans' fault for having such high expectations,
yeah, sure,
for the guy. Like, all you can do at this point is look at what he's done up to this point in his career and then decide to give him a contract based on his production now. Like, you can't pay him as, you know, potentially a generational player. You need good players to play for you. He's a good player.
Yeah.
And he's probably not going to make as much money as he would have if he was a generational player anyway. So that, in the end, should actually be a good thing, because you're going to save some money if you're the Toronto Blue Jays and trying to re-sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr.
That's Jesse Rubinoff. I'm Sho Ali. We got a couple minutes left here. Let's go to the text line, Jesse. 590-590, name and location. I'll read these ones first, because I'm not going to pretend to be a prospect expert. I really am not. You need Blake for that. But Mark from Thorold and Ed in Aurelia, both texting about Gabriel. And I think his last name is spelled Cancel, but I believe it's pronounced Cancel, I think. I think I might be wrong on that. But Gabriel Cancel, let's say, with the Buffalo Bison. So he signed with the Jays not that long ago. And so I haven't seen what the Buffalo Bisons did today, but on the series-ending loss to the Houston Astros, he hit his fifth home run in 7 games. Now, of course, you need to see how sustainable that is. I don't know how, and of course, anytime you bring up anyone from the minors, like from the Bisons to the majors, it's going to be a little bit of a drop off. But I bet we do see Cancel, maybe the Riley Tirotas of the world, at some point this season, if the season is lost at some point, like again, September call-ups type of things. But I bet we do see them. Someone else texted in. It was Justin from Vaughn. Do you think Joey Votto will debut the first home game after the All-Star break? I'm not sure about that. I will say, though, he looks like he's getting back on track. The Dunedin Blue Jays 20 minutes ago, Jesse, posted a video of Joey Votto, who can still bang, apparently, just cranking a home run for his rehab assignment. And he belted his first home run for the Dunedin Blue Jays. So that's kind of a fun story.
That's
going to
be the most exciting thing to happen in the second half.
Probably right.
That's what Blue Jays fans have to look forward to. And then, as far as the Gabriel Cancel, I'm just not going to play the game of the Blue Jays sign somebody and you bring in a shiny new toy and you expect the world from these guys. Like, I mean, he's maxed out at 18 home runs in Double A, which is nice, but he's also 27 years old.
Yeah.
And you're just sort of taking flyers on them. So until they show you at the major league level that they can contribute, I'm not sure it's worth getting all that excited about prospects that they just sort of sign here and there and take a flyer on.
David from Dartmouth, surprise, surprise, we pulled this one off. Well done in support of that new and improved Superman in left field. Another go get him day for Dalton Varsho putting on a show. I will say, just we talked about Varsho a lot today. He's been phenomenal, but from a defensive standpoint, certainly. But just as a quick note, I know David didn't necessarily mean this, but he mentioned Superman out there in the outfield. I don't know if you saw this. Kevin Pillar
hit
10 years of major league service time. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, that's a real accomplishment.
I gotta say, no doubt.
Like, that's not something a lot of people get to. And if you haven't seen some of his plays, because he had a tough start to the year with the White Sox. He got DFA'd from the White Sox. The Angels signed him after Mike Trout went down with an injury, and Mike Trout's still on the mend. But Kevin Pillar has been playing phenomenally well for the Angels right now. And he did his old thing the other day, climbing the wall in the outfield to save a ball.
Yeah, he took one away from J.J. Bleday.
It was wild stuff. So I'm very happy for Kevin Pillar because he's always been a great guy.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, he took the home run away from Bleday. And then later in the game, Bleday was up to bat again. And Pillar had another incredible diving catch. So he's clearly still got it. And he qualifies for the MLB pension now that he's had 10 years of service time. I mean, he was a great player. I was a great defender, more than anything, for the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's nice to be able to have yet another one that we can watch and expect some great plays from time and time again in Dalton Varsho, because Pillar provided Blue Jays fans with so many memories. Really, the only difference between Varsho and Pillar is the competitiveness of the teams, and you'd like to see the rest of the Blue Jays pick it up so that the games can be as meaningful as they were when Pillar was here for a couple of those years.
Brett from Calgary says, I'm tired of you guys bragging about Richards for the Jays. I would trade him for broken bats. Well, you know, Brett, it's a good thing you're not a GM, because Trevor Richards has been...
Have we been bragging about Richards?
Well, I think I've definitely said that he is in the circle of trust. I don't know if that's necessarily bragging, but I think he's played...
Is going to be in the circle of trust?
I know he's given him a 3-run home run today, but he has been very good for the Toronto Blue Jays. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, if you don't think that, then I'm not sure you're watching the same games we're watching.
Yeah, in fairness, the texter, it doesn't mean that he's not going to be traded either.
Sure.
There is definitely a possibility, as
he probably should be traded.
Jimmy Garcia, I mean, he's not a free agent, but at the end of the day, everyone's looking for good bullpen arms, and the Blue Jays don't have that many, but they have a few, and teams might be calling for the few that they do have.
I see a text here from David of the Six. You can't say the bats haven't come around lately, but now we have a calf pen. I guess as opposed to like a bullpen, a calf pen. womp womp. Time is. I actually don't mind that. I don't mind the joke, but time is running out on all cylinders. Clicking at once to make a wild card run. It very much is.
Yeah.
Either way, lack of arms is another indictment on the state of the farm. I'm not sure if it's an indictment on the farm team, because I just feel like you don't often see like relievers. Maybe that's just
yeah,
you kind
of pick those guys off the vine a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think
or like failed starters that end up as bullpen guys and just throw hard.
Yeah, okay. Certainly you can develop arms, whether it's starters or bullpen arms, relievers in the farm system. You can, but I just feel like it's easier to rebuild the bullpen on the fly via trades or guys who were DFA'd or whatever. And they've tried to do that. They did do that with, let's say, Yenesis Cabrera, for example, who was DFA'd by the Cards, and they went out and got him last year, but they have not been successful of that. And I think that to the point we were talking about earlier, I'm not sure it's even worth putting that many resources to getting guys, unless it's like for cash considerations to improve the bullpen. Having said that, they're going to keep on throwing things at the wall to see what sticks.
Yeah. I feel like the prototypical reliever is a guy like Nate Pearson, who comes up as a starter and ends up being converted to a reliever. Nowadays, everybody coming to the pen throws absolute heat. I know we were just talking about Trevor Richards, who doesn't necessarily throw that hard, but Most guys do throw heat these days, and you can just sort of find them. Like, they don't, not all these guys can go 5, 6, 7 innings as starters. So we end up converting them into relievers, and sometimes you find diamonds in the rough.
We'll see how the Blue Jays try and continue to make moves. No big moves have been made yet, but still approaching the July 30th trade deadline and the All-Star break, certainly. I'm guessing more moves will be made later on this July, maybe even before the All-Star break, which is approaching pretty rapidly. Hey, appreciate you guys all being with us on Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Arthur and Palmerston. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Find your local family-owned Crown at crown.com, Canada's number one rust protection. Appreciate all the texts. Appreciate all the calls. For Ben Shulman, Chris LaRue, Andrew Adams, Nick Blackmore, and my pal, Jesse Rubinoff, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We're out of here. Jesse is in with me tomorrow as well. We'll put a bow on this series in Seattle. Have a great Saturday afternoon, evening, everyone, depending on where you're listening from. We'll talk to you later.